You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
That soothing song only means one thing. It means we're live here on the MMAfighting.com YouTube page. UFC 259 Eve. It goes down a little less than 24 hours from right now because we have a 15-fight card. 5:15. Everything kicks off tomorrow, Eastern Standard Time, before we end it off with Jan Błachowicz versus Israel Adesanya for the UFC light heavyweight title in the main event. And we are here for our preview show with all of you guys. There's so much to discuss, so much to talk about, and we want you to sort of help us guide the conversation. But before we do that, I am Mike Heck, being joined by the whole crew here. We got Jose Youngs in Las Vegas. There he is. We got Alex Kaylee in Toronto, the Prince of Positivity. There he is. Cooler than the other side of the pillow. And E. Casey Lydon on the ones and twos, the most dangerous mustache in the game.
Blue steel.
Unbelievable. Jose, I'll start with you. I know Vegas is a much different city in this day and age compared to what this card would look like with the fans and everything like 3 years ago or so. But, you know, there's a lot of media out there. The buzz is in the air. Dana White's excited. Everyone seems fired up for this. How would you sort of describe the feel and, you know, what it's like there, considering there's no crowd and not a lot of craziness?
You think Dana White, from that press conference, does Dana White sound fired up? I don't think so. Yeah.
You don't think he's fired up?
He's probably fired up inside. But we were talking about this in the media. We were talking about this in the media room, like before weigh-ins started. Like, he was so just somewhere else during. I don't know where his mind was during that press conference. And then if you go watch the interview with Brett, it was just the. It was more of the same. Like, he's clearly excited for the fight and he wants his fight to happen, but doesn't sound like a fight promoter. Like, you go watch literally any Eddie Hearn interview, and you're like, oh, this is what a promoter sounds like. He sounds like Dana White 10 years ago. I'm not saying Dana White's phoning it in whatsoever. I just think his mind was somewhere else this week. Where? I have no idea. Maybe he's working on his Texas plan. But no, Dana White did not sound fired up at all to me. Like, his whole, like, sell me the bantamweight division was like, yeah, it's these two guys are really talented, and it's the perfect time for them to fight. And I was like, that's what everyone is saying. Like, sell the fight, like Peter Yan versus Aljamain Sterling. Like, give me something. Like, why should people care about Megan Anderson and Amanda Nunes? And it was nothing. It was a whole lot of nothing at the press conference. It was a weird press conference for sure. But yeah, in terms of the media, it feels as normal, close to a normal fight week as possible, without the fans, considering the amount of media, the prelim media day followed by the press conference. The only thing missing was open workouts. Like, I said the same thing on Fight Island with the fans and everything, but there's just more media here this time than there was for the Conor fight card, shooting videos and asking questions, that is. So, and from the last 12 months, this is as close to a normal fight week as I can recall.
AK, can you compare this fight week to any other? I mean, I know we're in a pandemic and it's different without having like tens of thousands of people in an arena and getting all fired up for the weigh-ins and all that different thing. But I feel like this card is really good. I think it's universally praised. I haven't really found anybody that says like a negative thing about it. So is there like an event that you would compare this to in terms of the build and, you know, being a day before?
I don't know if you can. I want to kind of pick up a little bit on what Jose said about Dana White's mood. We've seen him, and I mean, we've been critical of how Dana White's, you know, promotes things often. But I mean, usually when there is a card that's stacked, we do get that kind of jazzed up. I mean, even a little over the top, Dana. We've seen the kind of more sedated, some might say tired Dana, maybe at the end of like a four, like a, you know, a cluster of four fights in a month. I think the first, I want to say the first time they went to Fight Island, I remember by the last show, he was just kind of, you could see he was kind of like checked out.
He wasn't at the last show. He went home early.
I wasn't at the last show, but whatever the last show he was at, out, I remember. Yeah. He was literally checked out of his hotel. No, but I remember like whatever the last show he was at during that stretch, there you could just see he was like, I want to get out of here. I'm ready to go home. But it is weird to see this at the beginning of a new fight cycle, right? I mean, that we have that's gonna be 259 to 260 this stretch. I'm not sure what's up. I don't know if it's the whole press conference had a sedated tone to it. I wonder if everyone is, again, is just kind of trying to be on their best behavior, and you know, it's just going to be, it's kind of relieved that so far, knock on wood, I know we've done this like 100 times this week, that so far, none of the fights have fallen through. We're 24 hours away now from the card happening. Everything seems to be good. And maybe the celebration and the peppiness and the hyperbole will be saved for after. But yeah, it's funny, given the stakes and the drama, the inherent drama in some of these matchups, that we're not seeing a little more, you know, a little more sell from everyone involved. But I don't think it's a bad thing. I find it a little bit refreshing, if anything.
Maybe it's nerve. I don't know. Maybe it's nerves because, like, he wants to see some things play out certain ways. Like, and I understand that. I mean, you're a promoter. You want to do the best business you possibly can. I thought before the stare downs, when he finally got on stage, he looked like a new man almost. Like, I could see where you guys were saying that he was a little more subdued at the press conference and stuff, but I thought he was like in a much better mood, especially when once Jan and Sterling got up there and started facing off, like it felt like his mood was changed. You could see him getting all fired up. So why don't we start with that fight? Casey Lydon, Piotr Jan makes his first title defense against Aljamain Sterling. I think we've all sort of looked at this fight as not the people's main event, but in terms of competitiveness, this is as good as it gets. This is high-level martial arts, as Jose likes to say. So what are your thoughts on this fight? Jan's first title defense against Sterling, who, you know, 7 years ago when he came into the UFC, we were waiting for this to happen. We felt like this day was coming at some point, but it took 7 years to get here. He's finally here. What are your thoughts on the fight?
I kind of heard the term, you know, I don't like the term, but the term paper champ for Piotr Jan. And I feel because I think people, even though he beat Jose Aldo coming on off a loss to win the title, I really think this is his first real title fight in the sense that he's going against a true number one contender. It seemed like Aldo got this spot beforehand based more on his reputation and maybe, you know, put more butts in seats or pay-per-view buys. But I feel why there's a lot of true excitement for this is because, this is a true title fight between the champ and number one contender. And, I'm just super excited about it. And I actually, and I think we talked about this on the weigh-in show, I don't know. I know Piotr Jan is clearly a A-level bantamweight. I don't know if he's, like, the best bantamweight yet. And I think we're going to find out Saturday because I feel we truly do have the number one and two bantamweights in the UFC fighting, and that's exciting.
Jose, your thoughts on this fight? I know this is right up your alley, but also is there a certain thing, a certain element of this fight that's not getting enough attention? Because I feel like the narrative heading in, and it's maybe it's Dana White, maybe it's other people who have laid this out, it's Aljamain and the wrestling and the submission game against the striking of Piotr Jan. And that's true in some of these types of fights of this nature, but is that how you feel about this fight now? It's just that simple?
It's an interesting question if you're asking about just like questions about like this, the stylistic matchup and the skill set, I think what I'm like, I asked both of them at the press conference, like, what do you make of, like, I asked Aljamain, what do you make of Jan's grappling? Jan, what do you make of Aljamain's striking? And I think that's a real question. Like, so far, Aljamain's looked pretty much unstoppable with his grappling as of late. And he's only lost was to Marlon when he got head kicked. And that was Marlon is through and through a striker. And Jan has looked pretty unbelievable with the striking. And he's looking very impressive with his defensive wrestling. And he got full mount on Aldo and plastered all those punches. But Aldo's, again, a striker. So it's not so much a striker versus like, will the grappler get the striker down or the striker keep it standing? It's I want to see both men in the other's world. Because like Casey said, like Jan is clearly like right now he's the champ. He could very well be the best bantamweight on planet Earth. But I do want to see him fight an elite level grappler. Like we saw like when Khabib was the champ, we were like, oh, wait till he fights like a super high level striker. And then he just blitzed through Barbosa, Poirier, Gaethje. And he fought like he like now the knock is like even this knock. That's not a knock on Khabib because they never got there. Like he's never had that opportunity to face someone who's just an elite grappler. Like Gaethje has the wrestling, but he's obviously was much more a striker in his MMA. So I'm curious right now how Peter Yan fights a super high level grappler. And I want to see how Aljamain faces a super high level striker. So I do want to see both the others in the other one's strengths because it'll be very telling who will, I think after the first two rounds, if it gets past that, we're going to have a good idea of how this fight's going to play out.
AK, remember around a year or so ago, we had Israel Adesanya headlining an event. He was defending his title against Yoel Romero. And then we had Zhang Weili against Yuani and Jacek. And we were like, wow, like Adesanya versus Romero is really interesting. But man, we know that Zhang Weili versus Yuani and Jacek is going to be a firefight. Like we just knew, we didn't expect it to be like one of the greatest title fights in UFC history, but we expected like a really, really good fight. Do you have a similar feeling with Jan versus Sterling? Are you at that point? Because I kind of have that feeling. Like I don't feel like exactly the same, but it's similarities, so to speak. Do you feel the same way?
Are you putting that evil on this main event? Are you suggesting that Izzy again could be involved in a tactical battle that may be overshadowed by the in this case, two championship fights that come before? Mike, is that what you're suggesting?
No, I'm saying the feeling we had prior to the event starting.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think people have more sort of realistic expectations about Adesanya. It's funny, I don't hear as many people now saying, I think like 2 weeks ago, it was sort of like, oh man, like, you know, Jan Sterling and maybe even Nunez, Megan Anderson are kind of like, you know, sneaky in the way they might be more compelling than this champion versus champion fight. Now, I think we've talked, maybe it's just in the media, now I feel like we've talked about that, we've put up that talking point so much that it's like shifted the other way. It's almost like, people aren't expecting Blachowicz and Adesanya to be a classic anymore, which absolutely could be. I just wonder if because the hype is so big that now we've said, well, let's focus a little more on the other two title fights and some of the undercard stuff. So I don't know. I know we're going to talk about the main event later, but I do get the sense that a lot of people want Jan and Sterling to just steal the show. And it would be just the perfect culmination of how strong the bantamweight division has been lately. I think it was the best, most compelling division of 2020. And to kick off 2021 with, again, what could be a fight of the year candidate, or at least one of the best championship fights of the year, is going to be such a statement for the guys at 135. And I don't know where either guy goes from here. I know that a lot of the questions I'm sure people are going to ask about that. But I would be stunned if anyone in the bantamweight division right now is able to rattle off like three or four title defenses. I think we're going to see this title swap hands quite a bit. I just think there's just so much talent, and also matchup wise, you know, styles beating certain styles. If someone could put together a dominant dominant run at 135 from between now and let's say the end of 2022, man, they'll make a strong case for being like one of the pound for pound best in all of MMA.
Let us know what you think about this fight. Also, the co-main event between Amanda Nunes and Megan Anderson, we're going to talk about that, and then we'll talk about the main event, obviously. But John Anik was on What the Heck, and he said, man, I am glad that my job does not entitle me to make a pick for this fight. But what we do here on these preview shows, we make our picks as best we can. So in the closest fight in terms of the betting odds, Jose Youngs on this main card, and new and still bantamweight title on the line, Jan or Sterling, who do you got?
Ooh.
I don't know.
Your audio broke.
Yeah. I think Sterling walks. Yeah. There's a bunch of construction outside, so I try to mute myself as much as possible. I think Sterling walks away with it, but it's going to be hyper competitive. I think it lives up to the expectations, and this is by no means the only time these two will fight. I was speaking with our friend Oscar Willis last night, and we were comparing this division. If you throw TJ Dillashaw into the mix, like, do you remember, you know, the four kings in boxing at the peaks when they had Sugar Ray, they had Duran, and they had Hagler, Hearns. It was like those four were just at the peak of their careers, and they were just so dominant and so good, and some of the greatest boxers of all time, and they were all in the same weight class. And you throw TJ in to this mix, I think the four kings of Aljo, Jan, Sanhagen, and Dillashaw, I don't know if there's a better division, top four, in terms of competitiveness in the UFC. Maybe welterweight, maybe lightweight, but bantamweight at this point in time is the most competitive, at least. So I think all four of those guys are going to fight at least 2-3 times against each other in their careers. But I think Aljo wins in March 2021.
And Jose, look at the guys who are like outside of that top four. Rob Font is outside of that top four. Dominic Cruz and Jose Aldo fight in this division. You know what I mean? And they're not even near the top four right now. I wouldn't think. Cody Garbrandt. No. I know there's a flyweight, yeah, obviously, in Cody, his eyes. But
Marlon Moraes is still
Ricky a savage. Simone. This is crazy.
But I'm talking about the top four. I still favor those top four over everyone you said right now in 2021.
Yeah.
So I think it's those four, clearly the four best bantamweights in the world. Rob Font, if he got the TJ fight and won, he'd obviously be there. But I just think Font's sitting at five right now, which is his ranking anyway.
Yeah.
AK, what do you think, buddy? What do we got?
I'm going and new. I'm on the Sterling train. I've been on the Sterling train for a while, and I'll go as far as say Sterling by submission. Don't know if I can pick a round. I imagine if most people who are picking submission would assume the first or second round. I don't know. I could even see him hurting Jan in the feet and then getting the submission after that. So I think his striking is at that level where he can stand with Jan or at least you know, be enough of a threat. And his wrestling can help set up his striking, and I think it makes a difference. But it's crazy because Jan is so well-rounded. You know, we talk so much about Sterling's grappling, but Jan really, again, he's not a bad grappler himself, especially defensively. He's really good at kind of just getting guys off of him and, getting things back into striking range, where we know he's an absolute killer. So this is no indictment of Jan's skills. He's beaten who he's beaten to get to the top. He's beaten some great names. Some people can say they're past their prime. That's fine, but he took care of business. And I just think that Sterling is peaking at the right time. There's a reason it's the closest fight. So I'm not, this is no lock. There's no locks in MMA. This certainly isn't one of them, but I'm going to go Sterling by submission. I think it's going to be a huge, huge moment for him on Saturday.
Casey, you with these two gentlemen?
No, I got Peter Yan and New. I mean, sorry, and still. And new, because I feel like this is the real title fight. I really didn't consider the Aldo fight a true title fight. That's why I really think this is gonna be Peter Yan's night. And especially after watching, saw most of his rematch with Magomed Magomedov, who's in Bellator right now, the only guy to actually beat Peter Yan in a split decision four years ago, and. Peter Yan got that win back a couple years later in ACB. I just think Peter Yan's takedown D is awesome, and I think he's going to be able to – I think he's got better cardio over five rounds. He has a little bit more cage time recently with, unfortunately for Aljo, you know, having only fought 1 minute in the last year or something like that, which isn't his fault, but it's just how it is. But, I expect Peter Yan to actually win a clear 49, 49-46. I expect.
Also, that Magomed loss was definitely not a loss.
Yeah, it was
like Peter Yan definitely won that fight.
And if you watch Magomedov wrestle, oh my lord, that guy is just like, he is just glue, and like, he's actually someone I only wish he was in the UFC, just because I like to see him against other fighters I know about, but yeah. I'm happy Bellator has him. And I mean, that's just another crazy good bantamweight out there. So I am picking Peter Yan with the Ant Steele.
I have literally flip-flopped on this fight every day this week. And when I make my like final pick tomorrow, it might be different than what I say right now. But at this point, I'm leaning more towards what Casey is saying. I'm going with Peter Yan, at least right this second. I don't know why. I just got that like Peter Yan just looks like a guy that likes to break people's hearts and like enjoy it. Like maybe even more than like retaining the title, like stopping Aljamain's title hopes 7 years into his UFC career. I feel like he would take great pride and joy in that. You know what I mean? He's just got that look in his eye. I think his defensive wrestling is going to hold up in this fight. I think he lands with some serious ferocity. And I think things are going to get hairy for Yan down the stretch. I think round five could get really interesting. I think Sterling's going to have him in some trouble. But I think Yan will hold on and get a decision win in a very, very close fight. 48-47 on my eyes. That's what I think is going to happen. I can see Yan winning the first three, Sterling winning round four, and then Sterling making things really, really dicey in round five. But Yan holds on and keeps the belts in a classic, in a really good fight, a fight that lives up to the hype.
I definitely see a round where Yan's going to be just defending a choke or something for like good 4 minutes. And we're going to be like, whoa. And Rogan's going to be like saying it's over like 20 times. But no, I'm super excited about it. And if Sterling pulls it off, congratulations. I love being wrong.
Oh, but look, the real winners are going to be us.
but speaking of just a bad dude, wasn't there did Peter Yan? I don't know who had the article, but it was like Peter Yan on a yacht or something. Did you see that? Or like, I don't know. He was like, it was just him like on a big boat. I was like, man, he just looks like that movie villain. You know, it just like just this mean guy just on a yacht. You know, and just has his binoculars. I don't know. Just I like him. He's Peter Yan scares me. He's a scary dude.
Well, I'm sure someone has said it in the YouTube comments, but James Bond Yan has been people want they don't want no mercy anymore. They want it to be Bond, Peter Bond Yan.
Doesn't Peter Yan feel like a villain in a James Bond film or something? Like he's like the guy. I don't know, but then you know he'll tell you all the plans before you know
him and Valentina. Escape.
Yeah.
There's evil intentions in the smiles of one Peter Yan. He could be on a yacht, but he doesn't enjoy. Like he just has a yacht just to have a yacht. He doesn't enjoy the fact that he has a yacht. He's just there and he's taking a picture. He's not happy about it.
He likes the yacht because you know his competitor, his evil rival, can't have that yacht. So he has it. He's that type of guy. I love it.
he's we're turning him into a villain, and he's a nice guy. He's a nice guy at the end of the day.
Of course.
So that is going to rule. I'm really excited for that. And then
vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury. not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Coming up next, ooh, the lines have shifted a little bit more in the featherweight title fight. Amanda Nunes was a minus 1,400 favorite as of Tuesday. Some money coming in on Megan Anderson. It's minus 900 for Nunes. Anderson's a plus 600 right now. So there is some intrigue on the Megan Anderson camp. And AK, for those who missed between the links, you stated a pretty good case on why this fight seems to be very intriguing to you, how this fight has grown on you throughout the coming weeks and days. So for those who missed between the links, your thoughts on this featherweight championship co-main event, Amanda Nunes, the greatest women's fighter of all time, arguably the greatest to ever step foot in the octagon, defending against Megan Anderson, who this could be her only chance to become a UFC champion. What do you think?
Yes, Mike, we have done our job of bringing that line down. Our vile machinations to manipulate the betting odds are working. No, but realistically, look, I do think, and look, we're saying it got brought down 6-1 underdog is still pretty big. 6-1 underdog is still pretty big. 9-1 favorite, still pretty massive. So it doesn't surprise me that there's some interest coming in on Anderson. Again, look, those are good odds. I'm not a bettor, but I imagine your casual bettor, if they have some cash splashed around to saying, hey, that's worth throwing $20 on. If she gets the upset, then the return is significant. So that probably explains why the line is moving so much. But I don't know if there is that much real actual public confidence in Megan Anderson pulling it off. But you know, it's beyond the anything can happen narrative that we have with these kind of fights, or so and so has a puncher's chance. Like, there's realistic reasons to think she could win this fight. Okay, like I've been saying, she is. Like size-wise is really bigger than your average featherweight. I'm not saying Cyborg, for example, you know, who Nunes fought, is like a small fighter at all. But in terms of range, it's a totally different beast, totally difficult thing to deal with. So this is Felicia Spencer's big too, but this is a really tall, really lengthy opponent. And I just don't think that Amanda Nunes or a lot of fighters women who compete at 145 have had to deal with. And Megan Anderson, she does not look like a gawky, like tall, rangy fighter. She knows how to use her length. She has real power. She's not a point fighter from outside. She's not out there trying to just kind of snipe away. She can do that, but certainly when she sees an opening to find a finish, she's done it. She's done it many times. So she has that kind of power. That threat is very real. And the grappling is another story altogether. As we all know, it does feel like, you know, if Nunes wants to take this to the ground, she'll be able to do it. Her wrestling is very much improved from when she started in the UFC. She can impose her will in that department. But, you know, we'll see how Megan Anderson's team, obviously super prepared for that. So we'll see if she can convince Nunes to at least stand with her for a bit and have enough takedown defense to make the fight interesting. She's really live. I think 9-1, I'll be honest with you, I think 9-1 for Nunes is still crazy. I still think that's way too high odds.
There are some sites who still have Nunes as a minus 1,400 favorite. There's one that has Nunes down to a minus 615. So it depends on, you know, go take a gander at some different websites. Yeah. I'm looking at Best Fight Odds right now. They have like a whole list of all the different ones. And these ones are kind of all over the place. But Jose, what are your thoughts on Megan Anderson heading into this fight? Do you consider her, you either consider her a live underdog or you think she's going to get ravaged here? What side of the fence are you on?
I don't think she's just going to get destroyed, but I still heavily favor Amanda Nunes. I just think people like Felicia Spencer submitted Megan Anderson, and Holly Holm, a boxer and striking specialist, pretty much controlled her. And yeah, they've shown that one highlight of Megan rocking Holly in that fight and kind of just making her stumble. But like, that's pretty much it from that fight. And then she ripped open Kazangano's eye with a kick. That was freakish, but like even she was confused by it. And then she beat two people fair and square by stoppage, but Amanda's obviously beaten a who's who of women. She's the best female fighter who's ever stepped inside the octagon, maybe ever, in all of mixed martial arts. So I don't think Megan gets just smashed, because right now, James Krause is a cheat code and he's in her corner. So I think he's going to prepare her like no one else. So I don't think she just goes out there and lays an egg and gets submitted in the first round like she did against Felicia Spencer. But I don't see many paths to victory for Megan outside of, like, if she rocks Amanda, like, and just stays on her and puts her away with like punches against the fence, maybe, but I don't see her outpointing her. I don't see her knocking her out on like knocking her out cold, or ripping her eye open again. So I think her best bet path to victory would be rocking her and then just putting the foot, like the gas to the floor and just rushing her. So that's, but again, I heavily favor Amanda Nunes.
Casey, we haven't gotten, I don't think we've gotten your thoughts on this fight. We talked about it in Between the Links, talked about it on many of show. You've done profiles, you've seen Megan Anderson, you've probably been closer to her than any of us. What are your thoughts on her chances to pull off one of the biggest upsets in UFC title fight history tomorrow?
It is possible, but there would need to be significant improvements on her getting off her back, basically. I think standing, if they do 25 minutes of standing, I think it's a coin flip fight. I think Megan can beat Amanda Nunes standing. I've watched Megan strike. I've watched Megan hit pads. I've watched her move around with other rather relatively same-sized men. And I was like, ooh, she looks scary. She's a very vicious fighter. And I've seen her up close cage side beat the crap out of women in Invicta. But I've also seen Amanda Nunes beat the crap out of women too, very up close too. I get the odds, and if Megan has improved at Glory MMA in Kansas City with James Krause, if she's made the necessary improvements, this can be a very competitive fight. Otherwise, I think this fight goes a lot like Nunes versus JDR, which isn't very exciting. And it might be just Nunes taking Megan down and controlling her on the ground.
I actually really liked how Megan Anderson sort of, was reflective about and how she presented herself at the press conference yesterday. I thought she just kept things very simple. She didn't get distracted by anything. She didn't let any questions throw her off. The pressure of the division, she handled that very well. I thought her answers were short and sweet. That's what I was looking for out of her. Not trying too hard to promote a fight, just focusing, keeping things very simple. And that's a very important thing with Megan Anderson, because I feel like she's always been very talented, but it's a confidence thing with her. It's a mental thing with her. And these are things she's dealt with a lot in her life. Like if you went back and watched like old interviews with her, she was bullied as a kid and, you know, coming over to the States and trying this MMA thing, kind of getting a later start than others. And, you know, just having image issues and like all these different things about her, letting the negativity of MMA fans like affect her in a really bad way, putting her in rough spots mentally. She seems to be in a much better spot with that. Like she's over a lot of that, and having James Krause in her corner and seeing the success of Glory MMA, sometimes that stuff is very attachable. Like you just gravitate towards it. And again, I'm not saying Megan Anderson is a live dog by any stretch. I'm going with Amanda Nunes to win this fight, but I think this fight is closer than a lot of people think it's going to be. I think Megan's going to come out of there with her head held high. She might not be the champion, but I think it's one of those performances where you're like, damn, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. Her stock is still going to rise in a loss. That's what I think is going to happen. So anybody picking the upset tomorrow? Ooh, AK, I don't know. AK,
I'm not going to make that jump. Look, the wrestling was just too. It's not even the. It's not. I'm looking before the Spencer fight. It's how Amanda won the GDR fight that really has me thinking. I just don't know how Anderson would counter that if Nunes decides to go wrestling heavy. I know that's not everyone's favorite.
In the small cage, which will be to her advantage.
Exactly.
Amanda's advantage. Yes.
I know the GDR rematch is not everyone's favorite Nunes performance, but she kind of showed that thing that, you know, champions, sometimes it's not your best day. Can you go to your B skill? Can you go to your C skill to win the fight? And I mean, her B skill looked like her A skill at times with her wrestling. Again, it wasn't always pretty, but GDR is a tough as hell opponent. So she did what she had to do to win that fight. And I think Jermaine Durand has better takedown defense than submission defense than Megan Anderson. So that's my only reason. But I'll say this. We've talked about it so much that if the upset were to happen, it would be massive. I'm not questioning it. I'm not going to go, you know, I'm not one of those people who, if Megan Anderson like knocked Amanda Nunes out, would be like, oh, well, you know, we saw that coming. No, it would be crazy. It'd be crazy. I don't know if it would be on the level of, you know, like a Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey thing, which in retrospect, a lot of people, if you talk to a lot of supposedly, you know, smart fans, they're like, oh yeah, well, I knew that was going to happen. I'm like, maybe you thought she had a chance. That was a crazy moment when it happened. So this would be the same way. I think we'd be able to look back on it and say, well, you know, Megan's a good fighter and this is why she won. And we talked about this before, but it was still surprising. But, you know, it's pieces are there. The pieces are there for an upset. I don't have the guts to pick it. I'm going Nunes by submission. I'm going another championship fighting in submission.
All right, so Nunes across the board. Before we move on.
I am picking Nunes, but if I'm going to put money on the winner, I would put money on Megan because I think most of those lines you said are crazy. Mm-hmm. If we're just going straight pick 'em, I'm going Nunes by decision. That's I know. But on the betting line though, throw some money on Megan. That's all.
Yeah, it's dog or pass. I wouldn't touch this fight with a 10-foot pole, but it's dog or pass, no doubt about it. Last thing before we move on and talk about the main event. We can keep this as simple as possible. True or false, Jose Youngs, this will be the last women's featherweight title fight in UFC history.
False. I think if any, there might be one more, but no, I don't think Saturday is it for the women's featherweight division.
Casey, is this it?
If Nunes wins, the only way it stays around is if Nunes decides she's not fighting at 35 anymore. And she's going to do the rest of her career at 45. So it would be the Amanda Nunes division rather than a 45 division. That's the only way it stays around with a Nunes win. If Megan wins, then yeah, it'll be around for a little bit longer.
AK?
Nah, there's still some blood to be squeezed from that stone. Come on, they'll find a reason to make whether it's, you know, Amanda who said that as long as she's active, she plans to defend the belt. You know, even just to stay busy, she want to have that thing around. Give the UFC another headliner option. And if Megan wins, certainly she would either get the rematch with immediate rematch with Nunes or fight the winner of the Felicia Spencer. Danielle Wolf fight, I guess, which seems like an odd thing to say, but it just seems like something they could do. So no, there's titles or props. This is one that still has a little, just the bare minimum enough of value for the UFC to keep it around.
I don't know if Kayla would fight Amanda, would she? Or vice versa? Because they trained together. I mean, maybe if the money was right. I just don't see it happening.
Someday you got to fight. Do it.
Are they like, I know ATT's got like 10,000 fighters. I know that camp is very splintered. There's like camps within camps at ATT, so I'm not sure how best buddies they are.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. What would be a brilliant move is if Nunes wins afterwards, she's given her post-fight speech with Joe Rogan, the lights go out, and they come back on, and Pam Sorensen is in the octagon, and she lays out. I mean, see, she should be in the UFC anyways. Like, that's a fight we should have seen already. But there we go.
They're gonna
she needs to be wearing a mask.
She's gonna go wear a mask. They take it off, and everyone's all like, "Who's that?
Who is this?
Yeah, that's the Invicta champ, guys. Come on! I know we haven't seen her in a while because of COVID. But
she's gonna show up like Tito Ortiz and Impact, and just stand there with their arms folded, and people are gonna be like. This is weird. And then Amanda's going to be like, no, it can't be. And everyone's going to be like, what is going on right now? And then they're going to put the camera on Pam for an ungodly amount of uncomfortable minutes, just like Tito Ortiz.
Oh, I can't wait.
has anyone actually asked Amanda, this is like the most awkward post-victory celebration ever when she beat Felicia Spencer. And then she offered the belt to Felicia Spencer. You've seen that video, right?
Yeah,
it's just like you know Amanda meant it as a nice thing, but it was just the weirdest thing. Is Amanda ever? You know what I'm talking about, Mike? Have you seen?
You want to touch it? Psych.
Psych. Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I have to go back.
Oh, it's Amanda's a unique personality.
Yeah, I was too busy watching our MMA fighting media day scrums that AK wasn't watching. So.
I'm just kidding.
I'm taking the heat off myself and trying to place it somewhere else. I apologize.
You mean you're doing your job? You're doing your job, Mecco Heck?
Nah, I'm just kidding. AK is a machine.
More than fair.
AK is a monster. Okay, let's go to the main event. Jan Blachowicz just won the title not long ago. Light heavyweight is an interesting division, of course, but his first title defense is not against Glover Teixeira. It is against the middleweight champion of the world, Israel Adesanya, who made weight 201.5 pounds with a box of pizza in his hands. Not 193, not 190, not 195. He weighed in just over 200 pounds. That has, I don't think that has any significance to the fight itself, but Izzy's got a chance to make some history here, join that short list of simultaneous dual champions. Jose, you had the chance to speak with Israel Adesanya. You got to take his mind off the fight. What did you think, man? You were around the man talking some anime. Seems like he was enjoying himself. You know, what have you seen from Adesanya as he heads into the biggest fight of his career?
You'd have no idea. This man is about to move up 20 pounds to fight another champion. He's even said, like, hey, I'm going to get in the sauna. I'm still going to eat clean. He's not just showing up, not cutting weight. Like, he's getting his body right for the light heavyweight division. He's just not bulking up. He's just coming in 10 pounds, a little, maybe 10, 20 pounds heavier, but not hitting 205. But you'd have no idea this man was about to fight for a UFC championship. He's probably one of the more calm athletes I've ever been around in the UFC. Like, if he's not calm or if he's nervous at all, he doesn't show it, because he is stone cold right now, and it's very impressive. He just oozes confidence, and Jan oozes confidence too. So it's a tough pick. I like both individuals as people, but they're both awesome fighters. So I think it's a lot more difficult than people are making out. Like, people just kind of pick Izzy to win just because he's Izzy and he's been undefeated. No one's shown any signs of how to beat him yet. And Jan at one point was what, like 2-3 in the UFC. So maybe that's recency bias, but this is a really tough fight to pick for me.
I would agree. AK, we got right now, it's -225 for Adesanya, +175 to come back on Blachowicz. So money is, you know, squeaking in on Blachowicz to pull off this upside. And obviously he's a very live underdog in this fight. You saw these guys stare off twice. And I know, you know, we're not fighters, so we can't really pick these things apart. But did you see anything in those face-offs that made you think, like, one way or the other? Did anything surprise you? Like, obviously, when Megan Anderson and Amanda Nunes squared off, we were like, damn, like, we knew Megan would be taller, but she's, like, way taller. When these two guys went face-to-face, did anything, like, pop into your mind? Did you think anything of it? Or was it just like, eh, this is kind of what I expected?
Gosh, 2-1. The disrespect. 2-1. Favorite Israel Adesanya. The disrespect for Jan. Again, and I say this as someone who has picked against Jan like 6 times in his last 7 fights, I think, and been wrong every time. So I know firsthand what it means to disrespect Jan and feel stupid about it.
How many questions did Jan get at the press conference?
Oh.
You got two questions?
Yeah. That's it, eh?
The A side for the main event got 2 questions in a 30-minute press conference. You're talking about disrespect.
Well, I mean, look, I mean,
how did John Anik introduce
the man who the card was him? The man who the card was built around, and he wasn't talking about Jan Blachowicz.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that guy.
Yeah. So there we go. So who was really the A side in the eyes of the UFC? I think it's pretty clear. I don't know. Body language wise, yeah, it's tough to break that down. I think the size thing is what surprised me. I saw some people saying, like, oh my gosh, they looked like the exact same size. Maybe Jan, Izzy isn't that small. I'm like, I think people knew, at least as far as height goes, he'd be bigger, or at least as tall as Blachowicz. So that wasn't surprising. He did look a little more, I don't even want to know if I want to say muscular, a little more puffy, as he looked like he was carrying extra weight that he would normally cut. You know, he wasn't as drained out as he might be at 185 pounds. So it wasn't surprising in that sense, but I do think a lot of people who thought, like, oh man, he's going to look, you know, when the 193 rumors came out, people thought, man, he's going to look so skinny. And say, nah, he looks solid. He looked like a solid 200 and a half pounds.
If anyone's been watching Izzy's embeddeds and all that stuff, dude's wearing a lot of baggy clothes. I think that's on purpose. It's like, remember when Tyson Fury was on the stage with Deontay Wilder and he would just wear the baggiest clothes imaginable because he didn't want to show how fit he was? And then when he gets on the scale, people are like, holy crap. Like, this guy lost like 200 pounds and got in shape. I think it's a calculated move. And then he's saying 193 and then he shows up solid.
I think Izzy is really one of the guys, like, who's excels at the game beyond the game, as it were. Like, we talk about Jan being calm, which is great, and that's what works for him. Jan should be calm. He's got that sort of dry humor in interviews, and that's great. Stick with that. You wouldn't want to see him getting out of his zone. Izzy, I feel like he needs to be up to something, which is why earlier this week when people said, like, everyone jumped on the 190. Do you know how much he loved people jumping on the 193 thing file? He was probably scrolling through his phone and just laughing, 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 laughing. And that's good. And that's fine. That works for him. That's what keeps him engaged in the match. It keeps probably his head straight, you know, in the days leading up to a fight. Because if you just think about it, especially now when there's so, you know, so much less you can do with the quarantine protocols, you're going to go crazy if you just think about the fight. So some people deal with it differently. Jan, I mean, I know Jan's family is there. His wife was there on embedded, which is great. And Izzy, again, he's got a troll. He's got a troll a little bit. That's just how he does. So it's not even necessary to get into Jan's head. It's just to keep himself busy. So the 193 thing was always a bit of a gag, always a bit of a send up. And I hope he'll realize that that when he does stuff, and like even Jose says, wearing the baggy clothes, it's just kind of, it's a little bit of gamesmanship, and he's so good at that. And I'm not saying that has a major effect on fight night, but it is, I think, what makes him so confident, and what makes him sort of one of the factors that makes him the best that he can be on fight night is getting all this stuff out of the way. And then when the fight rolls around, then it's just strictly business.
Let me ask you this, Casey, because when Anik was on What the Heck, I said I felt like Blachowicz was kind of flying under the radar, but the closer the fight's been getting to Saturday, I feel like more respect has come his way. And Anik said something that was really interesting. He thinks the most underappreciated storyline heading into this fight is Adesanya's quest for all-time greatness. He's got a chance to become a two-division champion and join that short list. But I don't feel like people are talking about it as much heading into tomorrow than they did for Connor and Cejudo and Nunes and Daniel Cormier. Like, I feel like it's not, is it just because it's happened so many times? Like, not a lot, but that it's like the fifth or sixth, it's like the fifth time it's happened. Like, we've seen it before. Do you feel like that's why this is not getting discussed as much as the others?
It's because it's not John Jones. I mean, Jan's the champ, but if we're going to do a true ranking of the top 205ers right now in the UFC, you still put John at number one. And that's the problem. And that's a very smart power move by John Jones to leave the division. But really, you're still the champ. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So I really think, I really think that's it. I think you can't talk about the 205 belt without talking about John Jones. And since he's not part of this fight at all, pretty much, other than some tweets, it sounds weird, but he's going to be a paper double division, two division champ, you know, because I mean, if Izzy wins tomorrow, we're just gonna hear John Jones, you know, blah blah, you know, just, you know, yapping on Twitter. He's like, well, you didn't beat me, you know. So yeah, he'll have the two belts. Izzy won't care. But I think, yeah, it's just gonna be this little asterisk on it, you know, kind of like when my Houston Rockets won their two world titles after Jordan was out of the league for 2 years. You know, there's almost a little asterisk. He's like, well, yeah, you won because Jordan's not
in
the league.
He was in the playoffs in the second one.
Whoa. Yeah, there's no asterisk there. No, I don't believe in that. For
he had already come back. He came back and lost in like the Eastern Conference Finals or something.
Oh, whatever. When they won the 1 year.
Like, Rockets.
When they won.
No asterisk.
But it's the same thing. That's why I feel it's the John Jones thing hanging over us. And so the 205 belt is just doesn't have the same allure anymore because it just got vacated. If Dominic Reyes had beaten John Jones, like most of us thought he did, and then Jan beat Reyes, then it'd be a different story. But here we are.
It's like, look, would John Jones be favored in a matchup with either of these guys? Yeah, probably. So, I mean, that, again, you just have to ask yourself that question. Even Daniel Cormier, I mean, maybe not now, but a year ago, you know, before retirement, I think he'd be favored against both these guys too. So it's like, that's already two names that people kind of think of when they think of, you know, the best at 205, John Jones, Daniel Cormier. And that's not fair. Again, that's not fair to Jan Blachowicz.
It has nothing to do with Jan. It's just timing.
No. It's just timing, right? But that is, if you're trying to explain why there's just that weird kind of that extra lack of shine on this one from it being a champ versus champ fight, it is explainable, and I think a lot of people feel this way.
And it kind of goes back to what I said about Peter Jan, about the bantamweight belt. Even though he's defending it, it kind of feels like this is the real championship because these are the two number one guys rather than Aldo getting a courtesy title shot. So.
Jose, obviously Izzy is a rising star. He's one of the biggest stars in the sport right now. And with a win here, boom, he's off to the races. He gets a seat at that big table for sure. What if Jan wins? We talked about this on Between the Links. If Jan Błachowicz goes out there and beats Israel Adesanya, does he get the rub? Do you think he becomes, I'm not going to say he's going to become this massive star, but does he at least take a giant step closer to becoming a star?
It's clearly a massive step, but he's going to have to fight. If Jan beats Israel Adesanya, he's probably going to fight Glover Teixeira next. So who knows how much that will sell, how much interest that will drum up. Like, would you put Jan, like, if Jan was fighting Glover, I bet people would be clamoring for, like, the argument would be like, oh, how come Jan Sterling isn't the main event over Jan and over Jan Błachowicz and Glover Teixeira? Like, that would be, I can guarantee you people would say that. So it would be a massive step. I just think it would matter what happens in the fight after. And if he can get John Jones' interest in fighting again. But he said he has no interest in going up to heavyweight. Jan Błachowicz said he has no interest in going up to heavyweight yet. He wants to clean out his division. So Thiago Santos, he's lost to. Ratchik has looked awesome. Glover Teixeira deserves that shot. Johnny Walker's only getting better. I know he got hurt or got COVID or whatever. So he still has work to do. But beating Israel Adesanya before Izzy fights John Jones would be a huge deal for sure.
I still can't believe Izzy's only 31 years old. Like, this man is just getting started. That's a scary thing, especially if he wins tomorrow night, which is interesting. But we're trying to find, like, different ways to look at this fight that haven't been discussed, because I feel like this fight's been discussed since it was signed, and it's been broken on so many different angles. But we're going to do the moneymaker right now, the pick. Jose Youngs, we begin with you. How does this thing play out? How does the show end tomorrow night?
Man, if this was a big octagon, the 25-footer, whatever it is, the one that was on Fight Island, I would very much favor Israel Adesanya. But DC is right in his assessment that the small octagon will play a factor, and it's a huge benefit to Jan Błachowicz. Izzy has much less room to maneuver and do his thing in there. And I think Daniel Cormier's reasoning was, like, Jan will be able to set more traps, which is probably I'm going to take Daniel Cormier's word for it, because he's fought in the greatest heavyweight of all time inside a tiny octagon. And then John Anik made a good point. Like, he says small octagons heavily favor wrestlers from watching octagon side, because you can just shove them into the fence immediately after, like, two steps. You don't have to work towards it inside the small octagon. And he said if Jan can just, and this was all, like, he was just chatting with us, like, off the camera, he's like, if Jan grabs him and just holds him against the fence and just uses his physical strength to just big brother Izzy, who's the smaller, skinnier fighter, then he could easily see Jan Błachowicz is just winning a 5-round decision, like Stipe did to DC. He just kind of clinched him up and held him and worked his body and everything. But I don't think that happens. I think Izzy's one of the highest fight IQs in the game. I think he's 100% prepared for that. So I favor Israel Adesanya, but it is like 51-49. I think Jan is an awesome fighter. I just think the small octagon makes this much more interesting. And I'm actually glad this is in a small octagon, because we do get that factor in to see how Izzy handles it against a power puncher like Jan. But fighting a power puncher in Paulo Costa and beating Robert Whittaker the way he did and surviving against Kelvin, every question I've had of Izzy, like, what if he fights a guy like this? What if he fights a guy like this? What if he gets in this scenario? He's proven that he can handle it. And we've seen Jan lose. We've seen him stumble. We've seen him succumb to fighters that aren't the same caliber as Israel Adesanya. So I think in 2021, in March 2021, I favor Israel Adesanya, but it is very close.
Casey, your selection. Who wins? How does the show end?
Izzy takes it. I think he's gonna finish Jan within the first three rounds. But let me just say this. I'm looking at my previous picks. Man, I am bad at picking Jan fights. I've picked against him in his last five fights. The only one I got right was Thiago Santos, but I picked against him against Rockhold, picked him against Jacare, Corey Anderson, and Dominic Reyes. So But on the other side, I am 9-0 picking Izzy fights. Every time you find it, every time you find the UFC, I picked him. But no, I just think Izzy's a really, 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 really special fighter, and I think Jan is a very, very good fighter, and I think Izzy's gonna win. I think he's gonna piece him apart. I think he's gonna be his timing's better, his feints are better, and I think he's gonna just Jan with his kind of flurries. He's kind of slow and wide, and I think he's gonna get popped and get countered pretty hard coming in at some point in the fight.
All right, we got two for Adesanya. AK, where are you at?
Make it three. I think that this fight will, for the most part, take place on the feet. I think Blachowicz will be able to get it to the ground, get it up against the fence on a few occasions, but I have a lot of faith in Adesanya's defensive grappling to get out of those situations and turn things into a striking battle. And if that's the case, there's nobody, I don't think there's anybody in the UFC that beats Israel Adesanya in a striking fight. Primarily striking based battle. I don't think so. I don't think the best version of Robert Whittaker can do it. I think that rematch will happen someday. I'll still pick Adesanya. I don't think Jan Blachowicz can do it. I don't think John Jones could do it. I talked before about who would be favored if they fought. And again, in that situation, if John Jones handled that fight like he did, like the Thiago Santos fight, like wanted to make a statement and show off, you know, K1 bones, I think Adesanya would beat him. And so I certainly feel like he can beat Blachowicz. So I'm going to go Adesanya by knockout. I think this one, there'll be some trouble spots, and there'll be moments where Blachowicz looks good. There'll be moments where he's throwing heavy leather and has Adesanya literally kind of scrambling and jumping away and being just super defensive. But he's going to find the range at some point, and he's going to start stinging Blachowicz, and he's going to do enough damage. And I don't think it's going to be a one big shot. It's going to be a bunch of shots. They're going to rock him, and we're going to see a TKO victory for Adesanya sometime after the third. In the third round.
There will not be four, gentlemen. I'm going with Jan Blachowicz. I think he gets it done. Unanimous decision. This is not going to be the kind of performance that's going to gain him a lot of fans. Like, I know we just asked, like, could this be a star-making night for him? And if he goes out there and stops Izzy early and does it in spectacular fashion, yeah, that could happen. But I don't – while that's a definite possibility because of that legendary Polish power, I think – Blachowicz is going to fight a very smart fight here. I think him becoming a dad is going to be a big factor. The noose is in play. The rope, that the legendary rope,
yeah,
is back in our lives. That's an important
factor.
You could flip flop if you want. Yeah. You want to join? Well, Heck.
What I say? I said third round.
He's tilting.
Okay. He'll make it to Jan with a suicide rope or whatever. He'll make it to the fourth round.
Yeah. All right. We gained him an extra round. I'm looking at this, I'm looking at this from a here's $20. What are you doing with their perspective? Plus, right. there's like legit value in Jan Blachowicz. But if I'm betting on this fight, I'm not laying -220 on Adesanya going up a weight class and fighting Jan Blachowicz for a championship, going up 20 pounds. I just don't feel confident doing that. Like if I had to bet any kind of money, and $20 for me is $20. Like that's a big deal. That's some groceries. That's something for the kiddo. That's some school lunches right there. I can't be just throwing $20 at anything, but I could see a pretty decent return for Jan Blachowicz. I think there's some value there. I think he gets it done. I don't think it's going to be one of those performances that Dana White's going to go to the press conference and praise. Maybe that's why he's in such a weird mood this week, that he thinks Jan's just going to win a decision. I think Jan's going to win a decision. I think he's going to get in trouble at some points, but I think Jan's going to get his hand raised at the end of the day. 49-46 gets a decision that we're not going to like very much. There you go.
The master of the upset, the spoiler, Jan. You know, we said on the way in the show this morning, it's unbelievable he doesn't have a nickname. He's the spoiler. I mean, yeah, if we're going just by his UFC career, the man is the spoiler. He's won, again, I think the majority of his fight, the considerable majority of his fights is the underdog. What was the only one that he won that he, I think he was the favorite
Patrick Cummins.
That's it? No way. That's the only one?
Well, I know he's a favorite against Patrick Cummins and he lost that
one. And he lost that one. That's what I thought. Okay. And he won that one. But yeah, otherwise he was underdog to Luke Rockhold, underdog to Corey Anderson, underdog to Dominic Reyes. And there we go. Proved him all wrong. Amazing.
It is.
There you go.
The Jan story in the UFC is is amazing to me, just because he's main eventing, you know, the A side on the one of the most stacked. This probably is gonna be the most stacked pay per view of the year. And he, just being honest, as a from a promoter standpoint, he was brought in to lose against Reyes. He was brought in to lose against Anderson. Brought in to lose against Jacare. He was brought in to lose against Luke Rockhold. There's no way the UFC wanted him to win, just from a money standpoint. But here we are. And I think it's the same situation right now. The UFC, as far as selling pay-per-views, wants Adesanya to win this fight. So we'll see what happens. I love the story. I wish there was this was the type of fight I wish the UFC brought back primetime for. Really compelling story, because I want to know more about Jan. I think he's such an interesting character. Like, I want to know about his KSW days. I was reading a little bit from I think Shaheen's article from The Athletic about, you know, him growing up poor in Poland under a communist regime and things like that. I was like, I want to know that about him. And I don't. I know very little about him other than he loves his wife and he seems very nice. And when he walks on, yeah, that's about it. That's really
awesome. Did you see on Embedded his wife talking about him? Like, they used to dance, like they used to take dance lessons, and she, I think she's a bit of a dancer, and she tried to get him into it. And then I think they asked her, like, is he a good dancer? And like her answer was just, no, terrible. It's terrible. It's just a one word response, like, no, he's terrible. Stick to fighting.
Oh man.
So, there's a lot there with Jan, yeah.
I love the fight. I love the whole card. The card's really good. Rest of the main card, Islam Makhachev versus Drew Dober. We got Thiago Santos coming back against Alexander Rakic. Of course, Dominic Cruz versus Casey Kenny. We got Kyler Phillips versus Song Yadong. Joseph Benavidez versus Askar Askarov is a ridiculous fight. Of course, Askarov, the one guy out of the 31 who had a hiccup on the scales. He weighed in at 127. Fight will go forward 20% to Joseph Benavidez. Kai Kara France versus Rogerio Bontarin. Amanda Lemos versus Lavinia Souza. Tim Elliott, Jordan Espinosa. The UFC debut of Carlos Ulberg. We got Brady versus Matthews. Medich versus Cruz. Jones versus Bautista. This is unbelievable. This is a ridiculous card. And 5:15 Eastern time is when it's all going to kick off as of right this second. So, we'll have our Q&A tomorrow. Julia Avila will join us. What do you think? 4:30 Eastern, Casey?
What's that? I got to do the math. 1:30. Yeah, about. Yeah. We're on one.
Yeah. If it starts at 5:15, we'll go an extra 15 for a crowd like this. I think it's warranted. Before Julia we go. Avila.
Oh, we
tune in, guys. The Raging Panda.
We're doing all the questions the tomorrow panda. On the Q&A. Are we taking questions today?
I guess so. We have to, I think. Yeah.
Or.
Save them all for tomorrow.
Save them all
for
tomorrow. We'll get a couple.
Yeah, let's throw a couple in.
Wet their appetites. But guys, yeah, keep in mind, again, the Raging Panda, Julia Avila, will be here tomorrow. So we'll have a high-level fighter coming in tomorrow. So if you want to save those questions for her, I don't blame you. But let's see. Yeah, I like that. See what we got,
Mike. Yeah, let's get a couple.
All right.
We want Jose to be well-rested. Big day tomorrow.
All of us, I have to get up at like 5-6 a.m. to go quarantine.
That's right. You get to go to a different spot, right?
Yeah. So I have to bring all of my gear and everything and like suit to a whole nother hotel, and then I can't leave my room until like 2 o'clock or something like that.
Oh, make it a little bigger.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out. Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Over under number of fight of the night bonuses with a line set at 1.5.
Well, I am pretty confident that Islam Makhachev is getting a bonus no matter what.
I know that's right.
He's not wrong. He's not wrong. even if Dober wins in 90 seconds, it'll be fight of the night.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. That's really funny. So I guess what Scott is asking is, will we see two fight of the night bonuses, or will we see one fight of the night and two performance bonuses, or no fight of the nights? What do we think, Casey?
I think this is going to be one of those four performance bonuses type of just because there's so many fights on this card, and I just feel there's going to be just too many. The likelihood of four great finishes over, you know, two good finishes and one good fight, I think they'll rather give out four bonuses. So no fight of the night bonuses. I think this is going just all performance tomorrow. Man, but I wish the UFC would break out the piggy bank a little bit. This is a giant pay-per-view, a giant card. Let's give them a little bit more than 50 grand. I think they've been doing the same 50 grand for the last, you know, 8-9 years. It's like, come on, inflation, guys. Let's raise it up. If you raise the pay-per-view prices, let's raise those bonuses up, Mr. White. That's all I'm saying.
Or get rid of the bonus system altogether. But that's a whole other discussion, right? and just increase that damn base pay.
Yeah.
This seems like an easy under. Like you guys said, I can't imagine there'd be. We've talked about how many great fights there are on the card, but it does feel like there'll certainly be at least enough finishes on there for them to want to hand out performance bonuses, which is their preference. So for me to take the over, I mean, over would have to be like 500, like plus 500 or something. I think it's unlikely, but yeah, you give me plus 500, plus 600 odds. Maybe I'll go over, but no, I think under is the easy favorite. At least minus 200 on the under.
Yeah, I think we'll get like a normal bonus structure.
Yeah,
fight of the night, two performance bonuses. I have a hard time thinking Jan Sterling isn't going to get fight of the night tomorrow. Maybe it's just because I've overhyped it in my head, and I hope I don't let everybody down. If people just follow along everything I say, hopefully you don't. I don't want to let anybody down.
Santos Ratchik is a dark horse, I think.
Oh, we haven't even talked about that fight yet. God, that fight rules.
Who is it? Brady and
Matthews.
Brady and Matthews.
Yeah, that fight rules too.
I agree. Those are the two. I think we're talking about Wayne.
Because I think it's going to be one of those things where Santos fights like he did against, like we could get like the Jimmy Manoa with Santos fight, where it's just chaos for 5 minutes, and they still got a fight in the night bonus, even though Santos knocked him out. So I think that like Ratchik Santos has all the makings of that fight like that too.
Thank you for reminding me about that Manoa Santos fight. Dude, I forgot about it, but that fight, I found it in the back of my brain. I'm like, oh my God, that fight was, I remember that fight.
Because Santos reluctantly fought at light heavyweight against Eric Anders, right? Like he reluctantly fought because he was a backup, and then someone else, like Anders was the backup. And then the original guy got hurt. So then Santos took it on short notice. He goes, I'll fight a light heavyweight so I don't have to cut weight. And then he just won. And then he just won. And he just kept winning. So he stayed. It's like Calvin Gastelum. He just moved up and just wouldn't stop winning.
Yeah. Just, oh, well.
You can make an argument for like any of these fights could be a performance fight. Like even Trevin Jones versus Mario Bautista is a ridiculous fight. Like those two guys are going to throw bolos. Song Yadong, Kyler Phillips is ridiculous. Yeah. That is a ridiculous fight. We'll move ahead. Thoughts on Dominic Cruz versus Casey Kenny, Jose Youngs. If Cruz were to win on Saturday, I think he could easily call it a top 10 name like Munoz, Aldo, possibly request a Garbrandt rematch. Your thoughts on John's question?
Yeah, if Cruz wins, he has every right to call it a top 10. I think TJ kind of removed himself from being the greatest bantamweight of all time. So I just think Cruz is the greatest bantamweight ever by default because he was at one point the best ever, held all the records, and the only real time he lost before. Like he got his title taken away from him. So like get your title taken away because of injuries and then come back and beat TJ Dillashaw is so impressive to me. Also, TJ Cruz is one of the greatest fights I've ever seen. I think that's not on enough list for greatest fights ever. And it was on Fox Sports 1. No less. Wasn't even a pay-per-view. So, Cruz wins. And
what beautiful city was that? Did that fight take place in?
That was in cold January Boston.
Yeah.
I remember that.
I remember how cold it was.
Oh, it was snowing when we got out from the fights.
I remember Mike was in the press room. He didn't even say hi to me.
I was not in the press room.
Oh, you weren't in the press room for that one? Oh.
I was in
even worse.
I was in the seats. I bought a ticket.
Casey, why are you ducking me?
That was I believe that was the Deflategate Patriots night, if memory serves me correctly, against the Colts, where the Patriots just annihilated them. I'm pretty sure it was that. It was one of those cards in Boston, because I remember it being very cold. Yeah, I think it was that. But the one we worked was 220.
They used to go to Boston every January. They did McGregor, Seaver. They did Ngannou, Miocic. They did Dillashaw, Cruz. But then they've obviously gone in the summer for like Sonnen and Shogun. But for January it was always January, Chicago were like the two Fox cards at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
But yeah, if Cruz wins.
I would love it if he called out Aldo. I just want to see that matchup so much.
I would love to see Cruz versus Aldo, Cruz versus Marlon. If they want to do like Frankie Edgar's obviously taking time off, like Cruz, Frankie Edgar, like any of those fights I'm game for. But could like rematch Garbrandt, probably not, because I think Garbrandt's probably gonna fight Aldo. But man,
or flight attendant, but that's another story.
Or flight attendant. Dude, I don't – yeah, if Cruz wins top 10, for sure, for sure. Maybe Munoz. Yeah. Munoz coming off a big win.
I am so curious about this fight because I'm in the – well, I don't know about the whole Keith Peterson thing, but I did not like the stoppage in the Dominic Cruz Cejudo fight. I understand, you know, he got dropped and everything, but I just think that's part of the fight. I didn't like the stoppage. So, actually, I still don't know – if we have peak Dominic Cruz.
Did you guys, I know AK didn't, but you guys watched the media day with Dominic Cruz?
We all watched it. Everyone watched it.
He was talking about it. He said like what really backfired in that fight was, and I wasn't even aware of this. Like no fighters talked about it. The warm-up rooms are usually in the arena. So you can go from the warm-ups right out. The warm-up rooms were in the fighter hotel, and then they got shuttled over to the arena for quarantine reasons and stuff. Because in Jacksonville before the Cejudo fight, Cruz did not time it, so he warmed up, got to the arena, and had started to cool down already. And then so he went out and fought, and he just wasn't prepared at all. He said, and he goes, "It sounds like an excuse. I lost fair." He's like, "I lost. I shouldn't have put myself in that situation to begin with." But he's like, "That 100% played a factor." Is he just didn't time warm-ups right, because he's also, like he said, his style of fighting is very like he goes with the flow and like with the oohs and ahs of the crowd, like he can slip in. And there's that, when you take that out, like a lot of factors played against Dominic Cruz in that fight, and Henry Cejudo just beat the soul out of him anyway, so it doesn't even matter. But I think Cruz is a lot better than his showing against Cejudo.
I agree, and that's what I'm hoping I think Dominic Cruz, he has too much pride to come out to show up for a fight like this and not be the Dominic Cruz we expect. I don't think
it's also three rounds.
Yeah. More,
which is awesome.
I love that fight.
Really interesting.
Yeah. You know what? I didn't like that fight when it was originally booked. I know you liked it, Mike, but
I loved it.
I think over time I've kind of grown into it. So I'm very excited about that fight. And it's free.
It's just a super interesting matchup. Like, it's really interesting. And it doesn't, you know, it's not a rankings thing. It's just it's kind of an old school fight where you just have a really good stylistic matchup with, you know, the wily vet taking on the surging up and comer. I love when they do that stuff. But let me ask you this, AK. Is Dominic Cruz Ric Flair circa 2006 or 7 right now? Like, if he beats Casey Kenny, great. He continues on. But does he fight until he loses and then he moves on? Because he's got like a million options. The commentary, he's got, you know, he's making instructional videos that are very popular. I mean, the guy is a very talented guy. He gets it. Do you think he fights till he loses?
This is definitely depends on the method. I think if he loses decisions, he'll keep kind of cranking on. But I think that if he's like knocked out, if it's another quick stoppage, that's the kind of thing that's very frustrating for him. I think again, like we talked about the Cejudo thing, obviously he wasn't happy about that, led to all the controversy with Keith Peterson. But I feel like if he does get rocked again and gets hurt again, he's gonna have to think about it. I could see him losing like two or three more decisions and maybe sticking around, which I know sounds a little bit sad, but I could see that happening. But no, method definitely matters. And it doesn't matter because I'm picking him to win. And I don't know if we're doing an official pick thing. I like Kenny a lot. I think Kenny is, we've talked about him up as a future contender for a long time, but this is one of those, there's levels to this game fights, and even 6 months from now, would I pick Kenny? Maybe, maybe there's enough development that time. I think right now, I don't think he's quite catching. I don't think he's quite rising fast enough. I don't think that Cruz has declined that much I would go with Kenny, but, I like Cruz by decision. That's such a compelling fight. Gosh, you guys are getting me really excited for it. And like I said, it'll be on ESPN, so a lot of eyeballs will be on it. Al Mack thinks it's going to be the I love you, and then Kenny is going to turn Dominic Cruz's lights out. I don't think we see that on Saturday. I think that could happen someday, but I think Cruz sticks around. Even with all the other things he has going on, like you said, obviously he's a great analyst. He has other business interests. Seems like a guy who would be smart with his money. Obviously I don't know that for a fact, but seems like he would be. So he has options, but I also think he feels he's still super competitive. I don't think he feels he's lost a step at all, and I think he'll want to stick around.
Can I throw out a question? I kind of know the answer to this, but if Dominic Cruz takes a bad loss tomorrow night, will he get the JDS Overeem treatment from the UFC? There's too much of a commentary business connection, I think, on the outside.
I think they'll kind of let him do it at his own pace. Because it's not, yeah. I mean, it's...
I don't think he makes as much of those guys either, maybe.
I mean, like, listen, JDS has been brutally knocked out
top five guys. He was knocked out by, back of the line dudes. I think that's really important to note too.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, more about it's health conscious stuff more than anything else. I mean, if Dominic Cruz gets knocked out by Alexander Volkov, that's a different story. But if he goes out there and loses a TKO to Casey Kenney, yeah, that's a different thing. But if Casey just lights him up and knocks him unconscious, that's a different story. I just don't see that happening at 135 to Cruz. I just don't see it.
Didn't JDS do commentary for the Portuguese market a bit?
I'm not sure.
Not sure.
I know Verdum did.
He should.
I thought JDS did like a few.
I want JDS to do the English commentary. I just love hearing JDS talk about anything.
He's so bright. Yeah, so bright. Yeah.
He is.
I think I know the answer to the question. If Dominic loses big, but I think that should be tossed out there.
I think it'll get one more.
It's a narrative.
Yeah.
It's definitely a narrative. Like, you have to think at this point in his career, because just the way he's always presented himself, like, I want to be the very best in the world. I'm going to be the best fighter in the world. Casey Kenney seems like a very good litmus test to figure that question out. Like, if in his mind, there's no doubt about it that he's thinking about, if I can't beat Casey Kenney, like, should I be doing this anymore?
And that's what
it's not up to us to say. Yeah, it's not up to us to answer that question for him. But there has to be something he thought about before he took his pen out and signed the contract.
And I think we all think that Dominic Cruz is that type of fighter that he would not walk out into that cage unless he still believes that he is one of the elite bantamweights in the world. So that's why, despite the Cejudo loss and Noah's injuries, I really expect a good showing from Dominic Saturday night.
I'm picking Cruz too, and it's not really a skill set thing. I mean, I think Cruz can, with his skill set and the way he moves, can beat a lot of guys. I think he's just sharper mentally. I think we saw that Casey Kenney isn't the most mature guy on earth with some of the things that he said in the buildup to this fight. I know he wasn't all there hanging out with O'Malley and those guys, but you could tell there was some chinks in his armor, so to speak, in the mental game. And I like Casey Kenney. He's a great guy. I've interviewed him a million times. He's great. He's very he's a good dude, but he made a mistake there, and there's some holes there. That's that's very present, in my opinion. So I think Cruz just has the whole package. I think he does enough to get it done. Anybody picking Casey Kenney tomorrow?
Sure, I'll pick him to be
there. You go. There you go.
Arizona boy sticking together.
Arizona boy.
Both Arizona boys. They're both.
Oh, true. Wow.
Good point. Such a jabroni. There was
going for the Arizona boy, the big win.
God, what a bully!
And again, there was a reporter at the media day that brought that up at the media day and asked them both, like, "Hey, you're both from Tucson. You should watch the video. Okay, it's a good media day."
AK, now I'm just not going to do it out of spite.
AK, if you
now I have to make a, I'm making a statement by not doing it.
We have a YouTube channel on YouTube's, you know, MMA Fighting SBN. You click the subscribe button.
Yeah, not only do we have,
leave a comment, maybe.
MMAfighting.com.
Yeah, yeah. We have a website.
There's a YouTube channel.
It's a little blog. Yeah, it's a little blog.
YouTube channel too?
Yeah.
No, but there's a YouTube channel.
We have a YouTube channel.
It has a little over... Like if you add 900,000 to 100,000, we have like that. It's around that amount of subscribers.
Oh, now you're making me do math. You're making me Jose's trying to embarrass me on the preview show today. Goodness, please.
It's not difficult. It's not difficult, to be honest.
Oh, well, now everyone's picking on AK.
He said so many numbers. It's like 900,000. That's like. I can't even exaggerate how many numbers that is because I can't do the math.
Carry the one.
That's so much math.
We have the same amount of subscribers as people that showed up for the Toronto Raptors parade.
Oh, that helps. Yeah. Oh, that's a compliment. I thought you were going to take a dig. No, if anything, you're reminding me of me being at the parade and feeling like I was going to die.
Except our subscribers are organized and know how to stand in straight line.
Uh-huh. Hey, how many championships do the Celtics have in the last like 30 years?
30? As the Raptors. A lot.
Yeah.
No. If you go back to the 80s.
30? Not 30? Now who can't do math?
So we have the same. We have one each.
Wow.
I can't hear you, AK.
AK, your mic's off.
I muted myself. I know. I muted myself.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. You were saying bad words like booyah.
Hey, I'll make sure, AK, we go see that brand new hit movie in 2022, Raptors Pride, because they have such historical significance that they're going to make a movie about them. Unlike Celtic Pride, the classic with Daniel Stern and.
If that's
Dan Aykroyd, that's
piece of Boston Celtics media. It's going to be a long day.
All right.
Yeah. There you go. Do we have anything else?
No, I think we're good. I think we can take the rest of the questions tomorrow.
All right, listen, there is
John Dingham, my boy.
If you guys go on, you know, the MMA Fighting YouTube page, you're watching this, you will see a stream already up for the Q&A. What I would recommend you do is go onto that stream right now and start leaving questions in there. Mm-hmm. Leave them in there. Get a head start. Jump right on in because we're going to have 45 minutes to just pick stuff apart. We get a top 15 bantamweight in the world joining us. It's going to be a lot of fun. UFC 259 goes on tomorrow. I mean, this is a big event. I'm wearing my Fedor sweater. That means good things are happening. That means good things are about to happen.
This is MMA Fighting on YouTube?
Yes. On the internet. So get that. Get that free AOL disc and just put it in your computer.
Yeah. Can you email me the Earl? Can you email me the Earl to the MMA Fighting YouTube, please? That'd be really
helpful. Get some sleep, everybody. We got a long day and night ahead of us tomorrow. All right, 15 fights. We'll see you at 4:30 Eastern tomorrow for the pre-fight show for Jose in Las Vegas, Casey Lyon in the Inglewood, AK in Toronto. I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Happy birthday, AK.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.